Ayn Rand's novelette Anthem is an answer to those critics throughout history who have damned the ego. Rand decided to depict a locale in which the word I had been banned on pain of death, to show those who do not understand the concept just what it does mean, its full implication. The Oxford Dictionary tells us that a hymn is a song of praise to gods or heroes, and again, an ode or song of praise in honor of a deity, a country, etc. The verb hymn is listed as to worship or praise in song. Anthem is listed as a composition in unmeasured but rhythmical prose dedicated to the heroic in individual man, or simply a song of praise to the ego. Thus, if we do a composite of these meanings, we can discover that the word anthem in the title of Miss Rand's book means the following: a song of praise or gladness in unmeasured but rhythmical prose dedicated to the heroic in individual man, or simply a song of praise to the ego. That is the theme of the book, what Rand calls the core of its abstract meaning. The plot theme she calls the core of its events, the central conflict or situation of a story, a conflict in terms of action corresponding to the theme, and complex enough to create a purposeful progression of events. The plot theme of Anthem, then, would be the fight for individual identity in a totally collectivized society. Anthem divides into two major sections, chapters 1 to 6, which I prefer to subtitle Slavery, and chapters 7 to 12, which I prefer to subtitle Escape to Freedom. The escape being the major turning point, and the climax being the discovery of the word I. Chapters 11 and 12 also form the conclusion, a sort of musical coda, which leads to an ending that is the quintessence of the book, the word ego, in block capitals, as it would appear concretely over the portals of Prometheus Fort, at the same time symbolically stressing its importance philosophically. The book begins in a tunnel, which in light of the entire story connotes several related meanings. It suggests secrecy, a kind of hidden cell. It is also dark, an absence of light symbol, for the darkness of the world around the hero, Equality 72521. However, he is in blackness, searching for light. Remember that we are in a tunnel, not a cave, and tunnels, though dark, open in light at the end. I do not say that Rand necessarily had these things in mind. She may have, but merely that they are valid connotative meanings, both in context and in light of the entire work. The mood is enhanced by the blind darkness, which might well produce anxiety, and by the falsely assumed guilt of being alone, which it is important to note produces no fear, but only a sense of sin. A direct result of Equality 72521's environmental indoctrination. He thinks he is cursed because he seems always to have thoughts which are forbidden. We may at this stage ask ourselves, forbidden by whom and by what right? Thus, both mystery and suspense are created immediately the novel opens, enhanced by the mention of a committed crime, ironic in light of what is to come, of the stealing of a candle, of the Palace of Corrective Detention, and the mentioning of our secret, our evil, our precious work. The compounding of all these things acts like T.S. Eliot's subjective correlative to intensify the feeling of tension, and all this is capped with the words unmentionable times. Like Winston Smith in Orwell's 1984, Equality 72521 is secretly writing a diary, but unlike Winston Smith, he is also working on a technical invention, the result of which will be to create a higher standard of living and greater comfort for mankind. Both protagonists, of course, look back to the unmentionable past. Well, having established both mystery and suspense at the outset, together with a definite tone and mood, the authoress now proceeds with her opening exposition, with a purpose, to lay in the necessary groundwork that will allow us to understand fully how all individuals belong to the state, body, and soul, that is, how they live, or rather subsist, in total slavery. All members of this collective are put into the home of the infants until 5 years of age, where there are sleeping halls, white and clean and bare, symbolically suggesting sterility or no life. Here, Equality 72521 fought with his brothers and spent much time in the cellar. At this point, one reminds oneself that the protagonist is still in a kind of cellar, the tunnel. Note that as we get the picture of the state from birth to death, we also learn characteristics of Equality 72521, thus making the exposition inextricably bound to the most important conflict in the book. Abstractly, this is the individual versus the state. Concretely, it is Equality 72521 versus his brothers. And on an intermediate level, it is any freedom lover versus the dictators of a tyranny that would enslave him. From age 5 to 15, all members of the state are reared in the home of the students, a home that consists of 10 wards, one for each year of learning. The most significant thing about this indoctrination is the school prayer, which may perhaps be compared to the doctrines outlined by Mao Zedong in his famous Little Red Book. Quote, "We are nothing, mankind is all. By the grace of our brothers are we allowed our lives. We exist through, by, and for our brothers who are the state. Amen." Close quote. State is capitalized as it has replaced God. This prayer could certainly have been used in Orwell's 1984 by the state party members therein. All that needs changing are the words mankind and our brothers, which would be changed to read the party. Only party members would say the prayer, of course. The proles, short for proletariat, would have no religion and would not be considered. The prayer would come over the telescreen each morning, but the proles do not have telescreens. Here, of course, Rand makes a religion of the state, or of society. God is not dead. He has simply been replaced. The mystical body of Christ has become the mystical body of the state, thus blanking out on the fact that society has no meaning whatsoever apart from the individual. It is, in fact, a collection of individuals. Well, it is this prayer that Equality 72521 and his Golden One will totally reject. Equality 72521 did not like school, not because it was too hard, but because it was too easy. Everything was geared to the stupidest among the students, to the least common denominator, and it was evil to be superior to the average. More conflict ensues as Equality 72521 tries, without success, to appear stupid and to gear himself to the least common denominator. He's frequently lashed, that is to say, strapped, because he is superior, i.e., out of step with his brothers. We begin to see that all values are inverted, turned inside out in a collective society. At the end of their schooling, students go before the Council of Vocations to be told what their life's occupation shall be. This council instructs all, quote, "Dare not choose in your minds the work you would like to do," close quote. Why not? Well, the individual who loves his work is happy, satisfied, and above all, cannot be ruled. Strip him, however, of the joy he would get from working, deny him the right to do the kind of work he prefers, and he will be sadly frustrated. Such types are easy to rule. The Council of Vocations teaches that, quote, "If you are not needed by your brother men, there is no reason for you to burden the earth with your bodies," close quote. Next, we learn of Equality 72521's first commission of the great transgression of preference. He preferred science, desiring an occupation in that line, but is forced to reject his selfish desires and is made a street cleaner instead. For the rest of his life, this would mean spiritual death to him. Break the spirit is the idea. Do not let individuals become superior, and above all, never let them have a sense of accomplishment, which leads to self-pride, self-esteem, happiness, a sense of well-being, of being worthy to live on this earth. Men with such feelings are free of their brothers, that is, they do not need them, even if their brothers need free men. Free individuals cannot be ruled and are therefore a threat to a slave state of any kind. As the plot progresses, we learn, quite incidentally, so smoothly does Ayn Rand present it, that Equality 72521 is living in a medieval state, pre-Columbus, pre-Copernicus, pre-Galileo. At school, he is taught that the earth is flat, that the Ptolemaic theory of the universe is true, that ships have sails, that bleeding is the panacea for all ill health, and that iron bracelets are worn on the left. A nice subtle touch, that. Moreover, street lanterns are candle-lit, candles being the only source of light, apart from torches. The dress of the people is the toga. There is no printing press. All manuscripts are laboriously copied by hand. In this way, without explicitly stating it, Rand conveys her belief that if you scratch the surface of any socialist, you will discover a medievalist. In this medieval state, men may wish nothing for themselves. Equality 72521, however, breaks this taboo. He wants to be a scholar, that is, a scientist, inventor, engineer, innovator. Such men manipulate nature. Note that he does not wish to be a leader, that is, a politician. Such types manipulate men. He does not wish to manipulate men, nor to be manipulated by them. He is neither a sadist nor a masochist. He is totally independent, a first-hander of self-made soul. Well, after appearing before the Council of Vocations and being relegated to menial servitude for the rest of his life, Equality 72521 is sent to the home of the street sweepers, which is given a purposeful description by the authoress, though her deeper meaning is implicit rather than overt, thus complimenting the intelligence of her readers. The home is described as a gray house on a narrow street, suggesting drabness, while at the same time conveying the narrow-mindedness of the keepers, as well as implying the rigidity and confined nature of the hell in which Equality 72521 is now forced to live. Moreover, the sky is described as green, suggesting a phantom-like ghastliness, an abode drained of blood, lifeless, both mentally and physically, a kind of pathetic fallacy. That is, nature seems to mourn or be in sympathy with the plight of human beings, but only seems to be, hence the fallacy of her sympathy. Pathetic fallacy, by the way, is a literary device often used to enhance mood and feeling. Here, Miss Rand uses it most effectively. The home contains 5 long tables, 20 clay plates, and 20 clay cups. Now, Josiah Spode, creator of bone china, lived from 1733 to 1797 and was inventing and producing at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution and the rise of capitalism. However, in this state, the shackling of man's mind has made invention and progress well nigh impossible. Hence, there is no bone china, but merely clay plates and cups. The rooms are clean and all white within, symbolizing a tabula rasa, or sterility of mind. The days are tedious and dreary. Since the home is administered by asinine superiors who treat their charges like Pavlov dogs. Highly regulated, life in the home of the sweepers was excruciatingly boring. The day began at 6:30 when a bell awakened the automata, who were then allowed a half hour for dressing and breakfast. Work followed from 7 to 12 and from 12:30 to 5:30, with a half hour for lunch. The state dictators were more generous in the evening, allowing their slaves a complete hour from 5:30 to 6:30 for dinner, followed by a one-hour social meeting at which everyone and all together sang hymns, substituted for prayers, of brotherhood, equality, and the collective spirit. After this jazz session, the collective were adjourned to the city theater for 3 hours of social recreation, where they watched a play, not with a single actor, but with choruses chanting in unison. The plays were about work and toil, and how good it is to work together for one's brothers. Here Miss Rand's artistry enhances the theme. Colors are once again used to underscore the atmosphere of heaviness and gloom surrounding the subsistence of the spiritually dead automata in this slavish medieval state. We get in the descriptions, for example, words like shadows, the sky referred to as a soggy purple, and a black sieve. Thus does she make the reader actually feel the depression, the hopelessness, the endless routine, as a fearful nightmare. Then we discover that the sleeping halls are white, clean, bare, save for 100 beds. Frugality, utility, and sterility are the new triumvirate. In this manner does Rand, without actually stating it, remind the reader that this is a retrogressing state. The once industrial world has become an agrarian one. There is no industry, and grain is sown by hand. Naturally, the population is small. A large one could not be fed without technology and the inventions of modern science. The irony, bitter irony, is that Equality 72521 is right back where he started in the home of the infants. Not only has he not moved forward, he has fallen backwards. As if this were not depressing enough, Rand seems eager to impregnate the idea that this is what we face if we do not stop the march of authoritarian totalitarianism now. She next takes us to the gloomiest place of all, the home of the useless. This is worse than an old folks' home, because the inmates are merely 40 years old. They now do no work. The state takes care of them in a commune. They are depressed and debilitated from fatigue, having toiled 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are old before their time, soon to die. Occasionally one sees a person who has miraculously survived to 45. He or she causes stares. One day while sweeping, Equality 72521 discovers an iron grill over a black hole leading to a tunnel, obviously a former subway, the tunnel he is in when the story begins. Before, while sweeping, he had always used his time to study the stars, the trees, the earth. He also gathered glass vials and pieces of metal, most intriguing discoveries. He also found bones which he would try to hide in the city cesspool, but the tunnel was his greatest discovery. At the time, he was with International 48818, who had been the cause of his second transgression of preference. He had chosen him from above all his brothers as a special and intimate friend. The law stated that he must love all men equally. Equality 72521, like Winston Smith in 1984, concludes of the tunnel that, quote, this place was left from the unmentionable times, so it was true. Those times had been, and all the wonders of those times, hundreds upon hundreds of years ago, men knew secrets which we have lost. Close quote. And like Stephen Vincent Benet's hero in his short story, his wonderful short story, By the Waters of Babylon, Equality 72521 first reveals the superstitions instilled in him by the indoctrinating state, when without thinking, he automatically regurgitates the bromide, quote, this is a foul place. They are damned who touch the things of the unmentionable times. Close quote. And of course, we are again reminded of Winston Smith and his search for the verboten past. The supreme irony of International 48818's comment is known only in retrospect. Quote, we shall report our find to the city council, and both of us will be rewarded. Close quote. In his refusal to comply with this suggestion, Equality 72521 awakens to a sense of property rights, without which, of course, no freedom is possible. However, it is not yet a conscious concept, but merely a vague feeling. He does not yet realize its full rational significance. He says, quote, this place is ours, and if we ever surrender it, we shall surrender our life with it also. Which of course should read, this place is mine, and if I ever surrender it, I shall surrender my life with it also. Close quote. Not only does this reveal a sense of property, it also gives us the realization that this property is to be defended from outside invaders with his life, if necessary, because it is part of his life. Now a curious conflict occurs at this moment, centered in International 48818, who must decide for the state or against it, for his friend or against him. He chooses his higher value, his friend. He accepts the responsibility of a thinking human being who must choose, and he makes the right decision against a state composed of evil laws and evil rulers, sincerely believing that there is no way of changing either. Parenthetically, at this point, let me remind you that we are here living in a society in which the word I does not exist. Thus, whenever the quotation cited use the word we, the reader must change it to I. Similarly, they must be interpreted as he or she. when only one person is being addressed. In other words, there is grammatically no first or third person singular in the language of this state, simply because the concept of individuality does not exist. Throughout the rest of this lecture, I shall not make the changes. The listeners must do that for themselves. Equality 72521 has learned more in 2 years than he had in 10 at school. He learns things not in the scripts, and he wishes for nothing, quote, save to be alone and to learn, close quote. He has made the enviable discovery that serious learning is a solitary pastime. And he concludes that, quote, we alone in this hour are doing a work which has no purpose save that we wish to do it, and yet there is no shame in us and no regret, close quote. This, needless to say, is the unpardonable sin of the state in which he is living. And now a word about the overall style and method of Anthem, now that we have reached the end of the first and longest chapter in the book. Anthem, written in 1937, was first published in England in 1938, 2 years after the publication of Rand's first novel, We the Living. It was not published in America until 1946, since the 30s in the U.S. were thought of as the Red Decade, and such a novel would have had no place in the somewhat pro-communist America of that time. Anthem is a prose poem, more poetry than prose, written in a style similar to that of the Book of Ruth in the King James Version of the Bible, and sometimes reminiscent of Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, with which some of you may be familiar. The language is simple and forthright, despite the initial difficulty of overcoming the we's and they's when referring to singular things. There are a great many words of only one and two syllables, the majority, in fact. Here now is a perfect blending of the content with the style. The story concerns itself with a very primitive society, the inevitable future end of any collectivist tyranny, hardly learned and hardly philosophical. Most of the nouns are concrete rather than abstract. This attention to concrete things, coupled with the simplicity of language, complements Rand's conception of the society she is depicting, one that she would term pejoratively concrete-bound and savage. Note also the simplicity but rare beauty of certain descriptive passages. For instance, the one on page 38 of the pocketbook edition. Quote, the fields are black and plowed, and they lie like a great fan before us, with their furrows gathered in some hand beyond the sky, spreading forth from that hand, opening wide apart as they come toward us, like black pleats that sparkle with thin green spangles. Women work in the fields, and their white tunics in the wind are like the wings of seagulls beating over the black soil. Close quote. And again, quote, there it was that we saw Liberty 5-3000 walking along the furrows. Their body was of iron. Their eyes were dark and hard and glowing, with no fear in them, no kindness, and no guilt. Their hair was golden as the sun. Their hair flew in the wind, shining and wild, as if it defied men to restrain it. They threw seeds from their hands, as if they deigned to fling a scornful gift, and the earth was as a beggar under their feet. Close quote. Note also the pride of Liberty 5-3000 and the absence of humility. Rand inverts the cardinal virtues of the Roman Catholic Church by making pride the number one virtue, as opposed to the number one sin, and humility the cardinal sin, as opposed to being the cardinal virtue of Christianity. Characterization is, by essence, a romantic concept. There are really no individual villains because of the collective nature of the majority of the dramatis personae. The World Council of Scholars, who reject the findings of Equality 72521, is the nearest we get to a villain or antagonist, a collective villain, further evidence of complete integration with other facets of the novel. When I say that the characters are by essence, I mean they are either black or white rather than gray, which would have muddied the issue of what Rand is trying to say and would thus have made her meaning difficult to comprehend. The essence of Equality 72521 is his independence and fearless courage. It is instantly obvious, too, that the golden one, Liberty 5-3000, shares this essence. Equality 72521 is the statement of her values as she is of his. There is no contradiction between his body and his mind, nor of hers. Sexual attraction and the mind values are one and indivisible. The mind values are the essence of his love. Shakespeare's dictum, "Whoever loved that loved not at first sight," seems to embody the characteristics of all Ayn Rand heroes, as does her notion that sex without love is depraved. Equality 72521 further recognizes his own values in three other members of his society, mainly a dissatisfaction with the status quo, an individuality of outlook, and a desire to escape from their nightmare into freedom. These are International 48818, his special friend and all those like him. Here, of course, International 488 expands into a symbol of all those who are independent, like Equality 72521 himself. The other two, whom, to quote Shakespeare again, he clasps to his bosom with hoops of steel, are Fraternity 25502, who cries without apparent reason, and Solidarity 96347, who calls out for help in the night. These are obviously individuals who do not believe that they are their brother's keepers, and who believe that they have a right to exist for their own sake, as individuals, independent of the state. The didactic and moral message is not muddied by too many characters, a method that also helps keep the novel simple and the setting sparsely populated, as befits a medieval state, which would decimate its numbers periodically by famine and plague. There are the male and female protagonists, the three minor characters mentioned earlier, the boy with half a brain, for contrast, and the antagonist, the state, a collective character, represented by the council, homes, and social meetings. The state is mindless and totally authoritarian, indeed totalitarian. Depersonalized telephone numbers are used for names, the significance of which is made overtly explicit in the names that precede the numbers, names like Alliance, Collective, Democracy, Equality, Fraternity, Harmony, Similarity, Solidarity, Unanimity, and so on. These are all, of course, intentional, being representative of brotherhood, mobocracy, the will of the majority, or morality by hand count, oneness, egalitarianism, no individual rocking of the boat, uniformity, conformity, the solidarity of unions, the internationality of world courts like the United Nations, and so on. Nathaniel Brandon, who was an associate of Ayn Rand's for almost two decades, has written, quote, "The I is the root of all evil, the collectivists declare. In Anthem's world of the future, the word I has disappeared from men's language. An individual man refers to himself as we, and to another individual as they, and the reader is shown the nature of a world from which the concept of the ego has vanished," close quote. And in discussing the literary method of Ayn Rand and who is Ayn Rand, Brandon states, quote, "It is illuminating to note in passing a crucial difference between Ayn Rand's projection of a totally collectivized society and the projection of such a society in Orwell's 1984, some years later, 1949. In 1984, what is presented is a super-industrialized, super-scientific civilization. Orwell and many authors who have since written similar books may believe that totalitarianism is immoral, but they do consider it practical. They share the premises of those they denounce, at least to this extent. They believe it is possible to enslave man, to rule him by brute force, to forbid independent thought, and yet somehow to keep and continue all that which is the achievement of a free mind." Ayn Rand knew better. And this is part of her genius. And years later, in Atlas Shrugged, 1957, she showed fully what industrialization depends on and what happens when human intelligence ceases to function or go on strike, close quote. The plot of Anthem is lucid and linear. Briefly, it traces the birth and education of Equality 72521, a brilliant budding scientist, through to the state's refusal to allow him the right to follow his specific scientific interest, to his discovery of a tunnel or subway, to his reinvention of the electric light, its rejection by the state, and his flight into the uncharted forest, where he is joined by his girlfriend, the Golden One. The book ends with the revelation that the fountainhead of man's progress is his ego, with the simultaneous pledge of the 21-year-old Equality 72521 to build a new and better world in which man is free and not controlled by the state. Well, now that we have, all too briefly, I'm afraid, looked at the style, the characterization, and the plot, let us return to our detailed examination of the text. Chapter 2 begins with the awakening of love in Equality 72521 for Liberty 53000. But we are warned that, quote, men are forbidden to take notice of women, and women are forbidden to take notice of men, close quote. And we are once again reminded of 1984, this time of the Anti-Sex League in that novel. What Rand is stressing here is that if one should love an individual above all others, then a collective brotherhood of man cannot exist. One must love others in a collective estate simply because they exist, because they have been born, without choice or recourse to any value judgment of the person loved. It gives a blank check to all who must be loved, whether they are scoundrels or heroes. It echoes the biblical injunction, judge not that ye be not judged, whereas an objectivist would say in contradistinction, judge and expect to be judged. But to continue with style, colors are again used as symbols, but this time positively. The golden one is clad in a white tunic, now a symbol of purity, rather than the white sterility of chapter 1. And as she retreats into the fields away from Equality 72521, she is, quote, lost in a blue mist, close quote. Now, blue is the color often associated with truth. It is also the color of the Blessed Virgin Mary, Christ's mother, which should remind us connotatively or by association that the Golden One is yet a virgin, something very important and precious to Equality 72521. However, although blue represents truth, the words lost and missed suggest the lost truth of the unmentionable times and also the screening of truth from men's eyes in this state of censorship of restricted books. At this point, therefore, the character is blurred from sight in the same way that the mist blurs the blue sky, thus turning the mood from positive to negative. Symbolic, too, is the name Golden One, gold suggesting something rare and precious, also something bright and shining like her hair, and the One underscoring the theme of individuality while simultaneously postulating divorce from the state. In this way, the girl becomes a select individual, golden, and at the same time, this is an adumbration of her and Equality 72521's eventual separation from the collective estate in which they are both, for the moment, forced to live. Moreover, by contrasting what Equality 72521 feels for Liberty 53000 with the loveless sex act of the House of Mating, in which children are conceived in complete detachment from mind and personal feeling, Rand clearly reveals the depraved attitude of the state towards sex. It's not even pure animal passion, but some kind of ordered reflex. Thus, the greatest ecstasy possible to man is perverted and made merely a shameful, bestial duty. Here, Rand shows the sex act, as ordered by the state, to be even more corrupt than the sex act committed in a brothel. Rand's ideas on sex, like her novels, are innovative, original, controversial. Some may even find them bizarre. She believes in no dichotomy of body and mind. To her, love and sex are one, a unity. For a further elaboration of Rand's ideas on sex, it would be advisable for those who wish to pursue the subject further to research her Playboy interview in the March 1964 issue of that magazine. But to continue with Anthem, this mind-body unity, as with her sex theory, is brought out again by means of her description in the novel. For instance, on page 38 of the paperback edition, hear once more the thought of Equality 72521 as he observes the Golden One. Quote, their eyes were dark and hard and glowing, with no fear in them, no kindness, and no guilt, close quote, showing that the physical eyes reflect the soul behind them, the mind. And on page 44, in complimentary style, the Golden One says to her lover, quote, your eyes are not like the eyes of any among men, close quote. Once again, without overtly stating it, Rand tells us that these two, this man and this woman, are soulmates, the statement of each other's values, and thus fit for the highest ecstasy known to man, romantic love. Moreover, the eyes of the Golden One adumbrate the more fully realized character of John Galt in Atlas Shrugged, who is the pure essence of a soul without pain or fear or guilt. As in 1984, there are no smiles in this bloodless, mindless state, and yet, ironically, it is forbidden not to be happy. One of the many logical contradictions in a totally collectivized state without conceptual rationality. The burning of the books in the Great Script Fire is reminiscent of Hitler, Stalin, and of course again of 1984 and Winston Smith's destruction of the records in the record office where he works. Also, Equality 72521's comment on page 50, quote, "What are the words that we have lost?" Close quote. And the feeling of guilt with which he writes this question into his diary reminds us of the breakdown in language, specifically the disappearance of many words, so that nuance and clarity of meaning become impossible, as they also do in 1984. Like Equality 72521, Winston Smith also keeps a secret diary. The vanishing vocabulary also makes explicit the reason for the primitive language used in Anthem, yet again linking style to content. The only crime punishable by death is the use of the word ego, or I. Compare this with the one unpardonable crime in 1984, thought crime, on the part of the I, that is, the individual. Both suspense and horror are created by the insertion into the main plot of a story within the story, that of the transgressor of authority who is burned at the stake for using the lost word. We now realize the acute danger in which Equality 72521 has placed himself by continuing to search for this lost word. The saint of the pyre, as he is called, becomes the archetype of the avant-garde individual, persecuted and sometimes murdered by society at various times throughout history, for example, Galileo, Giordano Bruno, Joan of Arc, and all of those, whoever, were tortured by authority because their minds could not be coerced. Every physical torture is aimed at the mind. The motto of this state seems to be, if we can't force them to join us, kill them. Indeed, it is the motto of most dictators, be they individuals, oligarchs, or collectives. Note also how Rand makes of the tragedy itself a triumph. Quote, "There was a thin thread of blood running from the corner of their mouth, but their lips were smiling," close quote. A scene reminiscent of the triumphant death of Kira Argunova at the end of We the Living, her first novel. One of the major themes of her two great novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, is stated succinctly on page 54, quote, "The secrets of this earth are not for all men to see, but only for those who will seek them," close quote. One thinks of the Soviet Union with her teeming natural resources, which she cannot wrest from the earth without Western technology and know-how. In chapter 4, there's a sweep through time and space, giving universality to the story by linking it to an archetypal myth on an even broader sphere than with the Saint of the Pyre episode just commented on, that of Prometheus, a titan or god, who defied Zeus, the authoritarian god of gods, to bring fire and light to man at the price of tremendous physical and mental suffering. Equality 72521 is renamed The Unconquered, which brings to mind the uplifting poem of W.H. Henley, Invictus, the Latin word for unconquered. Quoting from that poem, "I am the captain of my fate, I am the master of my soul," close quote. Finally, his name is changed to Prometheus. The symbol is peculiarly apt, since Equality 72521 also defies authority, the new god, the state, and like Prometheus, is tortured for his effort to bring light to man. Liberty 53000 is also renamed first the Golden One and then Gaia, or Earth Mother, as she is to be a kind of new Eve, the spiritual mother of the new individualists, the new race of men. But returning to the plot, Equality 72521, happy in his work, goes beyond his allotted time, is caught and sent to the stone room under the Palace of Corrective Detention, reminiscent of Room 101 in 1984. He escapes from here, and the first half of the book ends with his innocently naive assumption that when he presents his great discovery to the World Council of Scholars, they will recognize its worth. Quote, "We shall join our hands to theirs, and we shall work together for the glory of mankind." Close quote. In light of what follows, this first climax is the most pointed instance in the book of dramatic irony. Once again, we think of Galileo and all like him. And so this brings us to the end of the first part of the book, the part I have titled Slavery. For the events of chapter 6 precipitate the flight from the state depicted in chapter 7, the beginning of the second half, which I think of as escape to freedom. And thus we see that the novelette has the simple beauty of structural symmetry, like two Doric pillars comprising the classic purity of a Greek temple. At the beginning of chapter 7, we are in the uncharted forest. Rand leapt ahead in time earlier in the novel through the use of flashback technique. Now she does it again. She tells us of the scene before the World Council of Scholars in which Equality 72521 presents his invention to that collective body, thus providing variety through the use of a different structural technique. At the same time, of course, it creates suspense. We are very certain at the end of Book 6 that the Council will reject the invented light, but we do not know the circumstances of the rejection. Obviously, Equality 72521 at the beginning of Chapter 7 has been forced to flee, or perhaps he has been banished. Curiosity is thus aroused. Just what did happen? At the same time, we know that wild beasts exist in the forest, and that Equality 72521 may be torn to pieces by them, or that he may lose his way, or that he may perish from lack of food. However, we are made to wait for a whole chapter before discovering what happens to him in the forest. We are also not told whether the Golden One is with him. This part of the suspense is left unresolved. Indeed, even at the end of Chapter 8, we still do not know if she will join him, nor do we discover the answer until Chapter 9. This technique, of course, is not new. It was perfected by Charles Dickens in the 19th century and perhaps best used by him over all writers in the English language. In Chapter 7, page 77, Equality 72521 says to the World Council of Scholars, quote, "Our brothers, we matter not, nor our transgression. It is only our brother men who matter. Give no thought to us, for we are nothing. But listen to our words," close quote, thereby revealing the extent of his indoctrination by the state. He mouths platitudinous and asinine bromides, which he does not consciously believe. We know that he does not because of his actions thus far in the novel, actions that speak proverbially much louder than words. Rand, however, does not tell us this. She lets the reader deduce it from the plot, i.e. the action, events, and dialogue of the work. When Equality 72521 presents his invention, the electric light, to the Council of Scholars, the president of the Council indignantly exclaims, quote, "Should it be what they claim of it, then it will bring ruin to the Department of Candles," close quote, a speech reflecting the beginning of the Industrial Revolution when agricultural laborers burned the ricks, which deprived them of their jobs during the transition from feudalism to capitalism. It should also remind us of more recent history, Rand's intention, I'm sure, of the feather-bedding practice of unions, i.e. the use of firemen on diesel trains, and in theater of the hiring of whole orchestras of musicians where none were needed because recorded music was being used, to give only two examples. The president continues, quote, "And if this should lighten the toil of men, then it is a great evil, for men have no cause to exist save in toiling for other men," close quote, a curious inversion of the bourgeois work ethic, and an overt statement to the effect that all were their brothers' keepers. It should be pointed out here that when chloroform was invented, similar statist mentalities complained that if God had intended man to suffer physical pain, no one should be chloroformed, simply because this would thwart the plans of God.